Hello, and welcome to The Awakening for Libra. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer here. Just FYI, I am experiencing some respiratory distress. Not terrible. It's a hell of a lot better if I'm sitting up, which I am doing. But I'm not at full vocal capacity these days, and so I'm going to take it slow and take it easy. And I'm even working from notes. All right. So, big year. Possibly bigger for Libra than for anyone. And the reason for this is because so much is going to be happening in Aries, which is your relationship zone. It's the opposite of Libra is Aries. And that is what you experience as people, but also as the world itself. So the seventh can represent a kind of a total environment and your perception of that environment. And as I've been developing over many readings and over quite a few years, I think that Aries is the primary crime scene associated with what all electrical media, but in particular digital media, has done to humanity in terms of redefining our entire relationship to existence and how we experience ourselves and our concept of what the body is. And the way that I have been tracking this is, for example, back to the Gutenberg press and then to the development of the next major stage of media history. Gutenberg Press is like 1460 or something, and then mid-1800s, around 1850, the emergence of the telegraph and all. There's always something going on, something significant going on in Aries. And we're back in one of those moments now where not only significant, but nothing that anyone has ever seen. As I've mentioned here and there, I've gone back to 1 BC to look for any precedent for this exact astrology, and have not found it, though there have been many very intense moments when Aries has kind of flared up, and the result has usually been, a war. A big war, like the Civil War. And you're looking right at all this. Aries is the world that you look out at. That's how you... It kind of describes what you see when you stand on the street and turn your head and look around, and it describes everything that you're in direct relationship to. And it's a fact that everything is a relationship. We tend to reserve this word for certain kinds of relationships, grant all kinds of exceptions. But, I have a relationship with my mechanical pencil. I have a relationship with the microphone I'm speaking into. I have a relationship potentially with you. Certainly in this moment, I am relating to you. And coming through, most likely, something like your seventh house. I'm speaking directly to you. And Aries is filtering all of this. It is conditioning our experiences. It's conditioning our responses to our experiences. And something I haven't mentioned, and I don't think I mentioned it at all in The Awakening, so let me get to it here, possibly for the first time. I don't think I said this. anywhere in those 99,000 words of chapters. Sometime in the 70s, I don't know where this was. It may have been in Culture Is Our Business. McLuhan says, Marshall McLuhan, my favorite philosopher, says that the computer is LSD for the business community. Now, this was in a time when people were dropping acid quite a bit, which was, you know, frequently occurring in culture through the early 70s till cocaine takes over in the mid 70s, and people are driven not by the introspective nature of hallucinogens, but by the highly competitive, motivating consumption of stimulants, extreme stimulants. But he said LSD is, because the computer is LSD for the business community, that the computer is, it creates a hallucinated environment. It creates the ability to interact with those hallucinations. In essence, a completely imaginary existence. And this was back in a time when, you know, a computer was a thing down in the basement. You know, the mainframe was over in the mainframe building, and maybe were a couple of terminals. The DMV had them, and you know, the phone company had them, and you know, different government offices and all that. Well, they were all getting high on you know, digital acid at that time, and no one. Well, McLuhan could foresee this. He once said that there'll come a time when the destiny of every stick of gum is tracked by a computer. And that sounds like Walmart's inventory system to me, or Amazon.com. I'm surprised they're not, you know, making you account for the chewed up piece of gum and, you know, giving you a credit for having disposed of it properly and demerit for having not disposed of it properly. But now here we are in a world where everyone is consuming this hallucinogen. And no one's talking about this. No one's admitting it. No one in our time recognizes this, that we are living in this kind of psychedelia. I mean, everything seems kind of normal in a way, unless you look carefully and you know, you wonder why so many people are acting so completely insane, why there is so much misery, why so many people require mood stabilizing drugs to just get by. And much of this is filtering in through Aries. And this has had some, this Aries has behaved in some very strange ways in terms of the responses created in the human experience. And I say this historically, you know, looking back over several Eris cycles and Chiron Eris cycles, particularly back to the printing press where everything changed. People didn't know it. Churches got a copy of the Bible. People didn't have them in their homes in 1500. But this completely recreated what humanity was and how people thought of themselves. And now, and created into a stability, a inwardly focused sense of subject and object, a sense of understanding of the difference between you and the rest of the world. And this was undone overnight by radio in the 1920s, undone, completely unraveled. And humans were turned into tribal beings. And I would add, tribal beings where everyone's high on ayahuasca, only they are doing normal things. They're not like hanging around the ayahuasca temple. They're driving around on freeways and managing investment portfolios and attempting to raise children. And you are looking at this. And so if you pull up your chart in the written, it's way at the bottom. It's the last thing in the bottom. Libra's on the left. And if you look out toward the right side of the chart, it's not very, I didn't draw it in very dramatically, but everything's there. The Saturn-Neptune conjunction is there. The Chiron-Eris conjunction is there. I put an eclipse symbol in for the April 2024 eclipse. I have indicated that Venus is going to be retrograde, and I haven't in this chart indicated, I may redo it, just add it and rescan it, that another element, Borsisi, is entering. Now, worth mentioning this, I know it's never really productive to recommend that someone read a book who has time, but I will dare to do it. There's a book called Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut, published 1963. It is delightfully short, and the chapters are like 3 pages, maybe, and it's wicked funny. So he gives you incentive to read. It's not like a normal novel where you're like introduced to 73 characters and in the first half hour and you can't remember anybody's fucking names. I'm like, what are you doing to me here? I need like a cast list at the front of the book, like the War and Peace Cliff Notes. You can't read War and Peace without the Cliff Notes because there's the list of characters is like 3 pages long. Madam this, and Lord this, and the Marquis to whatever. None of that's true of Cat's Cradle. It's a basically it's a story of a nuclear scientist who retires, and he's also a chemist, and he comes up with a substance called Ice Nine, and it's the story. He makes a little bit and splits that into three, which is three children inherit. And therein lies a morality tale of the chemical age, the nuclear age, and how people are compensating for the insanity that we're living with. It's really quite good, and I trust that if you give it a read, you're going to be telling other people to read it too, because it's so astute. And so the Borsisi comes out of Cat's Cradle, and it no one knows how it got this name. I mean, I talked to all three of the discoverers, who I have encountered in various stories. Nobody knows how it got. I kind of find this hard to believe, since only the discoverers can name it, at least initially, and it was named pretty soon, and was the first planet ever named for a fictional deity. Now, I mean, you could say all deities are fictional. Like, was there really Pallas Athene? But this is like a modern fictional deity out of a book, The Sun God, in Cat's Cradle. And Cat's Cradle is reminding us of how insane the world is, how we have come to accept that we are perched on the brink of global disaster at all times, and we basically think this is normal. And the insaner things get, the normaler people think they are. You can think they're normal because it's so cool that, you've got this, like, drone you can send up and take a picture of your house from 400 feet in the air. Things are so cool because, I don't know, we've even gone past the time of cool gadgets, like where nothing's cool. Now, like, a conventional wristwatch would seem like a cool thing. And the gadgets are not the point. The point is that the immersion of consciousness, of experience, of human existence in the environment has transformed everyone. And this includes the people who have never touched any of this technology. They are being conditioned and informed by the environment. This is the entire thesis of McLuhan, is that the environment drives the show and that the content is just coming along for the ride. And so what I am suggesting here as my comment, now 16 minutes and 30 seconds in, out of the gate, is notice your environment. Notice where you are. Notice how people are responding. Notice what people are saying and doing. And I would encourage you to not normalize things, to look upon weird, insane, ridiculous things as such. And this is not about necessarily judging them. It's really about observing, what is so. And to remember that we are living in a very different world than the one that you were born into. Now, most of my listeners and readers are older. I'm guessing on average 40 or older. Mine is not the kind of astrology that young people are into. And there's a reason for that, because I'm very bookish and thoughtful and analytical. So assuming 40 and older, that you do not live on the same planet where you were born. One of my little jokes I have with the young people that I sometimes work with is, do you remember when the phone rang? And they'll be like, they remember when it was hanging, it used to hang on the wall and it rang. Well, do you remember? Yeah, okay, good. Do you remember when it had a bell, not an electronic tone? Because after a while, they got rid of the bell and put in an electric tone. So keep this in mind. And if you're wondering why people are so strange and why nothing seems stable, just imagine that someone dosed the punch at the party and everyone dipped in and they don't know it, but they're all high as a kite and acting like they're not. Only I dare say this is not the pleasant kind of hallucination that people sometimes have on a drug like LSD, which I personally found to be a difficult and not entirely pleasant experience. Way too probing of the unconscious in a caustic way. I don't know. And you are very much walking around in this world. You're looking right at it. You are interrelating with everyone. So pay attention. Now, the changes of 2025 are likely to come on fast and furious. This is often what happens when planets move from what is called a cadent house, which is equivalent of a mutable sign, and in your case, it is both. Your cadent house, the sixth, has upon it a mutable sign, Pisces. And when we move from cadent to angular, there can be rapid progression of events. And you may feel as if these things can have you completely out of balance. Like, how do you have enough strength to stand up to it? And I want to remind you of something you may not even have ever heard about, though you may notice that I always draw in a point in early Libra. I don't know if you look at my charts, but in every chart, one of the first things I add in that does not come with a commercial program is a thing called M87, Messier 87. And this is a galaxy probably 3 to 4 times the size of the Milky Way. That's a lot of mass difference. How many stars? Pardon me. A trillion stars. Milky Way has 300 million. So more than 3 times larger. And there's a supermassive black hole at the center. It must be super duper massive. And this thing sits more or less permanently currently in about 1.5 degrees of Libra. And when astrology got around to considering the Aries point, one Libra 17, technically today, one Libra 1659. And it's only going to move by precession. It doesn't orbit anything. It only moves because the Earth wobbles. 1 degree every 70 years. And there were discoveries in astrology around the time that this thing got near Libra, because it's not something considered by the ancients, of course. They had fixed stars. They used fixed stars, but not galaxies. They used fixed stars in our solar system. So what I am saying is that this, as you go through an experience of very large forces moving in the world around you, in your world, and as the speed and intensity of events in the world picks up, and as the awakening aspect, Chiron conjunct Eris, and the kind of secondary awakening aspect, Saturn conjunct Neptune, all in Aries, picks up, you have a kind of ballast. You have weight. You have gravitas. You have something that anchors you to reality, to your existence. And there's also a point that I think is becoming very important that I wrote quite a bit about in your written reading, which is logos. I did really my first full delineation of logos in your reading. And logos, basically, for practical purposes, is the ability to reason and to think coherently. And let me be the first to tell you if I were Libra, and I picked Libra rising when I cast the chart for Planet Wave, so that I have voluntarily subjected myself to all things Libra, since I kind of tend to live on Planet Waves, you have the ability to think coherently and to reason in the midst of the complete ridiculous chaos of the world right now. This, by the way, is Kristen Williams, friend of Planet Waves and quite a gifted ambient artist. The piece is called Sitting Still. It's about not driving one day, about not having to drive. Kind of amazing, right? You might try that sometime. I am taking a couple of days here. Well, I've been a little bit sick, so I am not driving. And then, like, you know, anybody I work with, I have asked them to give me a couple of days of space to recover more fully and to get these readings done, because I found that even any interaction with people can shift my entire trajectory. So I have to be mindful who I interrelate with, whatever the terms may be, especially and including relate to sexually. There's all kinds of fun that can be had with sexual play and experimentation, and there's all kinds of opportunity for disruption and, disruption. So the principle of the witness is something that I'd like to introduce into this monologue. The witness observes the world and does so for the sake of doing so and for the sake of having it be observed. Till recently, people acted differently when there were witnesses around. Now, it almost seems like no one seems to care, or like the concept has lost whatever validity that it had. But I'm not going to succumb to that completely. I think that the witness, the one who observes, is an important concept. And by that, I mean observes and does not have to get involved. And there are going to be a lot of times where there will be temptation to get involved, and where that temptation will, complicate things considerably. Now, I'm not suggesting that, you be a gawker, or, gawking is different than witnessing, right? Rubbernecking is not witnessing. Rubbernecking is the talk radio term for a delay caused by an accident on the other side of the highway, where the opposite direction of travel is slowed down because everyone slows down to look at the accident. Those are called rubbernecking delays. I don't know if that term is used anymore. But that's what it is. So that's not witnessing. Witnessing is a conscious, almost spiritual experience. And I would suggest that you cultivate the witness in you. The disciplined observer who seeks understanding. Witness can be at a close proximity. It does not merely need to be, far away. It can be right there. And there are certain things that are going to be real close to you that are happening. And there are going to be times when you know that you need to invest yourself in a situation. And the key is going to be discerning the difference between the two of them. Now, there's also a concept that is slowly losing its meaning, which is cooperation. We are being kind of force-fed this idea that everything is a service that you must pay for. That is not cooperation. You know, if I go to Village Pizza in Socrates and order a gluten-free pizza, which is the best gluten-free pizza around, that is not cooperation. That is commerce. Cooperation is I'm here to help. Oh, but speaking of Village Pizza, they were the ones saying during early COVID when nobody knew what the fuck was happening, they're the ones who put out a message and sent the word around, if you're hungry, come in, we will feed you for free. So immediately I called up and put $100 on my debit card in the spirit of supporting their feeding people for free. That's cooperation. And I suggest that you maximize this. It is not cool. It is not macho. It is not about, you know, being better than anyone. Small amounts of cooperation go a very long way. Another idea is synergy. All of this is apropos of the seventh place. We'll move on after the concept of synergy, but we're going to take that with us into the rest of the houses that that I look at. Synergy is the principle that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And if there is no whole, then all you have is the sum of the parts. And this really creates a frightening and dysfunctional world. And I am concerned that we are doing a lot of adding up the parts rather than, getting something better than that. The concept of synergy is if you you take apart your car and add up the cost of all the parts, it would come out to like $500,000, whereas the whole car might have cost like $35,000. So you buy the whole car at once, and it's a lot cheaper than buying it part by part. So that's a kind of a simplistic concept of synergy, but it works well enough. And besides which, you have to if the parts aren't assembled, there's no car, and you can't get anywhere with the parts sitting on the floor of a warehouse. So all of this, by way of saying that you are going to be processing a lot of incoming energy, data, momentum, experience, flow of flow of basically everything. First, as Chiron and Eris form their conjunction in your opposite sign, sending this shock through known reality, where I suspect that many people will admit for a second that we're all hallucinating on the LSD for the business community, known as computers. And then Saturn and Neptune come above your horizon. They move from the cadent mutable Pisces into angular cardinal Aries. And as mentioned, when planets shift from cadent or mutable, which tends to proceed slowly, then there's an acceleration when we get to angular and cardinal. And you're going to need outlets for this energy. Now, Libra is extraordinarily well positioned to experience Pluto in Aquarius. And I say this because, as I hope I wrote about quite a bit in your written chapter, the fifth house, you have Aquarius in the fifth place. You're Libra rising, so you just count the places. And when we get to Aquarius, that's place number five. So it's the first time there's an air sign that comes up after Libra. And the fifth is about creative experimentation. It's about play. It's about a certain kind of sex. I like to call it the sex you have in the art studio, not the sex of the marital bed, not the sex of, connubial obligation, same concept, not the sex to, consummate the union of the two families, et cetera, et cetera. It's about playful, exploratory, experimental, creative sex, riskier sex, daring. And it is the house of all things related to art and expression. And so what you're getting here, and this is going to hold, clear through Pluto in Aquarius, which goes out to 43-44, an outlet for this abundant energy that you have. And here we get into the principles of cooperation and synergy, because we find that potentially in the greatest amount in Aquarius, right? It is one of the important signs of together, as is Libra. All the air signs they have a together quality. Libra has it. It's inherently relational. Aquarius is inherently about group relationships. Gemini is about relationships with siblings and with neighbors, and siblings and neighbors, and commerce-type relationships. There's a big burst coming into Gemini also. And so what I suggest you do is guide your situations into creative collaboration, which will give you an organizing principle and help you avoid the various shades of the acid trip that society is on by getting people working together for a common purpose of some kind. But you'll know that common purpose, you'll recognize that common purpose, because it has some element of fun and pleasure to it. It's not just simply work. Now, you have earned this. I mean, this is a tremendous mitzvah. This is really almost as good as it gets. And you've earned this by living through a decade and a half of having your security base rearranged, undermined, literally, like honeycombed out like a mine, experiencing of earthquakes and shifts in the terrain and all kinds of socio-political bullshit going on in the world that affects us more than we like to think that it does. And as your reward for having gone through all of this, you are now, I think, being granted a tremendous degree of creative liberty, of a new kind of freedom and the ability to exercise a new kind of leadership. And that would be creative leadership, or leadership that is creative in everything that you do. And there's also the bit about you being willing to experience and explore the ideas that you have, being stronger than anyone's objections to them. People, absolutely, not everyone, but a lot of people, despite his popularity, despised Bob Dylan when he hit the scene. There are people who thought that pop art was complete and utter bullshit. And today, it certainly does not seem like the point that those artists were making is now much more obvious, that we have the context and the hindsight to look back on it. As there was a riot in, I think, 1913, when Igor Stravinsky first performed The Rite of Spring, a riot with, like, police horses and people throwing things outside the opera house. I mean, I'm amazed anybody cared that much, but apparently they did. And so anything that is truly creative has the tendency potentially to polarize and to get mixed reviews, right? Good old, what's her name? The one who just did a $2 billion concert tour. Everyone thinks she's fantastic. I can't name a single one of her songs. And when the acclaim is universal, you can pretty much be sure that it sucks. And when the acclaim, when there's mixed reviews and when there are open haters and despisers, you can be pretty sure that at least there's a real experiment going on. And the fifth is the house of experimentation. It's the house of direct experience. And anytime anyone picks up the role of artist in any way, large or small, they're conducting an experiment. The experiment, if it is sincere, is going to get some kind of a result. And often that result is that there's pushback. So Pluto will give you the – Pluto describes quite beautifully, I think, the power, the strength to stand up to even the idea that you might be critiqued. Now, most people, would rather not encounter, the risk of getting canceled or whatever. But Pluto in Aquarius is saying there's going to be some kind of an experiment. You might as well make it the one that you like the most and that you think is fun. All right. Apropos of the air signs. Mid-year and then into 2026, Uranus enters Gemini. This, too, is going to be a disruptive influence for the world. We will see a burst of technology like nothing we can even conceive of today. By the time this transit is done in 7 years, 8 years, the technological world will not be recognizable. The iMac Pro that I'm working on right now is going to be a museum piece. And this too will change human relationships because Gemini is a very important sign of human relationships. It is a sign associated with, as I said, siblings, neighbors, and local commercial relationships. The ninth house gives that a bit of a international flavor, kind of like making the whole world your home and you recognize everyone as your brother and your sister, an inherent Libra state. But Uranus also, as I said, it advances, particularly Uranus in Gemini, advances technology very quickly. And the ninth has a purpose which is inherently spiritual. And with Gemini there, I would plead with you as I pleaded with some others to recognize that we don't need Bibles, which are complete edited scribbled bullshit. When you go back and look at the Dead Sea Scrolls and you find out how many times they were rewritten, and then the whole thing wasn't committed to text until around 1450, which is like last week practically. We don't need preaching. We don't need sin and heaven and hell to be spiritual. We need to be respectful of one another. And so your ninth place, Gemini, is getting a major, sudden, powerful activation with Uranus coming. Now, this will happen, as I say, over a phase of time between like July and the following March, April or so. I'm not opening up my laptop to do that. But basically, it's the summer of 25 into the spring of 26. And so beware. This is also likely to spark up your, the appeal of international culture and traveling, getting to a couple of countries. And I would make your list of countries that you want to go to and, pick a couple and maybe go to one of them soon. You know, don't wait for this. You know, conduct your first experiment or start saving your shekels and, because you're going to want to do some rambling with your Uranus entering your ninth house. Right around that same time, Jupiter enters your 10th house. And this is a tremendous buoyancy and speaks of incredible potential for success in what you're doing. And also the luck element really working for you. And, visibility and, being respected for the reputation that you have earned. And this is something that you have to make a conscious choice to collect upon. I mean, the state of self-esteem on our planet is dismal, and we have most people are relying on external sources of affirmation. I would love to see everyone drop the doctor, the MD, and the PhD from their names and just be their name. Like, really, like, why do people need to be Joe Schmo PhD? Like, big deal. You went to grad school for a while. You were abused by your professors. You wrote a book that nobody has read, but your committee, if you're lucky. Let's get rid of that. All this appeal to authority and being authoritative is ridiculous. Other factors in Cancer suggest that the source of your self-respect and self-esteem is completely an internal thing. And this is about professional self-respect, professional self-esteem. There's a lot of activity in Cancer. Cancer is your 10th place. This is a very important. All the angular houses are high action, high experience places. All right, so a centaur has arrived. That's Asbolus. This, though I don't think any other centaur people would say this, the beauty of Asbolus is that it defines common ground. Asbolus means carbon dust. So it's a centaur named for a substance. I don't know the mythology of this centaur, but I've always loved the fact that its name means carbon dust. And carbon is what all forms of life on our planet have in common. And so, as with Uranus and Gemini and Pluto and Aquarius and all of this activity going on in the seventh place, the emphasis with Asbolus in the 10th place, which is going to be met by Jupiter fairly soon when a quick mover arrives where there a slow mover is, the first thing that happens is there's a conjunction, will magnify this. And Asbolus is a fantastic survivor. I mean, that's one of the first things I noticed about Asbolus when I was looking at it in the charts of my clients and what they were telling me about their lives. I noticed the people who had endured really challenging incidents as children often had some form of a prominent Asbolus, and in that sense, it grants protection, and we can all use protection. Particularly when the stakes are high, and when you want to do gutsy things. Well, it sounds to me, looks to me like you're going to want to do some gutsy things with Pluto in Aquarius and so forth, and all that Aries is really, simply put, astrology that boils down to rising to the occasion, and I would say a very rare occasion at that. I want to close up by offering repeat perhaps in a slightly new form, of the idea that you have sufficient resources, energy, intelligence, strength, power, and general wits to not only survive all the wild things that are about to happen in the world, but to genuinely thrive in this environment. Somebody has to. Might as well be you. But the modes of thriving are different from the modes of surviving. And the modes of thriving include meeting the world face on. They include conducting your existence as an experiment. And an experiment implies a level of freedom, particularly the freedom from the ideology of other people. And we see this, by the way, in both Uranus and Gemini and Pluto in Aquarius, because the controversy around art always involves whether it's just a little too free. And a little too free either means like a little too happy, a little too sexual, a little too different than that guy who doesn't want his perch taken away and so forth. And so Aquarius is usually loaded with religiosity that is not usually called that, right? It's called socially acceptable or, something like, you make up a couple of other words for socially acceptable. But the bottom line is that it's people being sanctimonious. The ninth is loaded with all this church stuff. And with all of this book is the one and only Word of God. And you can only find the Word of God in this one book. That's a typical ninth house concept. Whereas a lot of places to find the Word of God, and you don't even need to call it God. But if we can't find our spiritual connection point in our fellow humans, if we cannot find our spiritual connection point in cooperating and mutually supporting and generally being friendly to one another, the whole concept is bullshit. And so that's where I'm suggesting that you, you look for your particular heaven, and remember that a whole bunch of the people that you deal with and talk to every day don't know they're high as a kite. They don't think anything special has happened, and they forgot they took a big cup of the punch when they walked into the party. Without knowing what was in it. And, you will be led by your inherent, the word is gravitas, I think, and your guts. You're willing to do things that challenge various forms of the status quo. And to set the example of living your life your way. And part of doing that, I think you'll be very well served by keeping one foot in tradition and never forgetting how things were done in the past. And never forgetting that our grandparents and great-grandparents had very, very different lives than we have, and would never, ever have imagined that we would be living in the particular world that we are in. I think most of them would go insane in about 10 minutes, not understanding, and they would need to hold your hand as they slowly lost their mind. And that the truth is that we're not that different than those people. Only what we're looking around at is all that we've got to look around at. So keeping a line of communication open with the past, a line of communication open to tradition, and some respect for tradition, which needs to be reinterpreted for every new moment in history. Knowing what you mean when you say love. All right, that's what I've got for you for this annual edition of Planet Waves. Thank you for trusting me with such sensitive subject matter. Pretty much everyone at this point has access to two signs. We may do a one sign sale at some point, but the idea is there's always two points of view, so I'll see you over at that second point of view. And signing off at just before 11 o'clock on Christmas Day in Kingston, New York. Lots of love, and bye for now.